Hey guys, and welcome to Hunting Land, presented by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. If you'd like to stay up to date on hunting tactics, land management, land values, and land market dynamics, this is the podcast for you. This week's show is brought to you by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. If you're frustrated with typical hunting and fishing magazines and tired of reading content, meant for guys that are up in the north or up in the Midwest, check out Great Days Outdoors Magazine. Don't get left behind following the guidance of guys who don't fish or hunt in your home state. You can pick up a Great Days Outdoors Magazine subscription, and it will help you become a better Southern outdoorsman. Great Days Outdoors Magazine can be found at your local Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Tractor Supply Company, Rural King, Bass Pro Shops, or you can save online at greatdaysoutdoors.com. NCX. As a landowner, the more income I can generate from my land, the better I can take care of it. That's why I use NCX. NCX helps over 20,000 American landowners like you understand and maximize the value of every acre. Find new revenue streams for your land with programs like timber, carbon, wildlife habitat, solar energy, and more. Get started with a free account at ncx.com and discover the true value of your land. I'm your host, Joe Bai, here today with my co-host, Butch Theory. And Butch, I don't know about you, man, but a lot of times it feels like on a piece of property, I feel like I am having to make compromises, or I'm just not able to do everything I want to do. Most of the time, it boils back down to money. Today, we're going to be talking about how landowners can really maximize their profits with leasing land, but it's probably not what you're used to hearing. There's an emerging market, like you've heard about with Airbnb for your extra bedroom in your home. Short-term bookings for your land are on the rise. There's more and more people looking for it. There's more and more people aware of it. And it's not just for hunting.
No, lots of different options.
I know that's been one of the things I've enjoyed the most about land ownership is it's 12 months out of the year. Even though I love to hunt, you know, and that may be 6 or 7 months out of the year, there's something to do up there all the time. If it's, you know, if it's not hunting season, it's going down to the creek and swimming.
You're burning or shed hunting there.
Shed hunting or looking for artifacts or mushroom hunting or picking berries. I mean, there's just always something to do.
Yeah. Fishing.
I mean, I love being a landowner because of all those different recreational aspects, but you know, I'm not there that much. I mean, as a remote landowner, I'm not there that much. There's a lot of other people that love doing those things too. And you can capitalize on that, but it's not as simple as just leasing your hunting land to somebody for the year. You've got to know where these people are looking for these types of activities. Got to make it easy for them to find you. Today, we're going to be getting into everything you need to think about, maybe even troubleshooting some of the pitfalls that I'm sure you could think of that you might have if somebody was on your property that you didn't know. And to do that today, we're talking to Nick DeCastro of Land Trust. Nick, welcome to Hunting Land, man. Thanks for joining us today. Before we jump into really how landowners can maximize profits with land leases, tell us a little bit about how you got into doing what you're doing, a little bit about your background.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on today. I feel like my story is kind of similar to a lot of people's story who start companies. I, you know, found a problem that I personally felt and, you know, saw something that I wanted to use. So I went out and tried to build it. So, you know, just a very quick background on myself. I grew up, I was born in Laguna Beach in California, grew up down there. Kind of in the heyday, I would say. I'm 36 now, so half my life ago, I grew up there. It was a lot less people, a lot less development. I grew up fishing and surfing, spearfishing, inshore fishing in the ocean, hunting quail and stuff in the deserts, and just had a really nice childhood. Passionate about the outdoors since, I don't know, like one of my first memories is going dove hunting at like 3, 3.5, 4 years old, something like that. And then I went to school on the East Coast and then lived in a bunch of cities. I worked in technology before I started Land Trust and found my way up here to Montana in the end of 2016. And, you know, that was kind of where I was confronted with what today is Land Trust. You know, there's a bunch of great public land here in Montana, as we were talking about before we hopped on the podcast, and that's an awesome resource. But I found myself looking at a lot of amazing private land and saying, how can I connect the dots there? And of course, there's door knocking, which has existed forever, but that was not a very fruitful path. And, you know, it takes a lot of time and low hit rate. So, you know, a marketplace model really just kind of made sense to me. I I had been an early host on Airbnb when I lived in New York City, and I was a traveling sales guy. I was never at my apartment. So I, you know, I basically listed on Airbnb and paid my, you know, annual lease in whatever, 3 months. And so that just was like a, hey, there's a supply, there's demand. You have all these beautiful ranches and farms around where the, you know, the owner operators aren't necessarily leveraging their recreational resource. And there's a bunch of people obviously that want to go out and use it. So how do we connect those two? So that's basically how we got here.
You know, growing up in the Southeast, we're used to leasing land. Like that's not a new thing down here. I would say, I would have to guess that probably 80 or 90% of the hunting that's done in the deep South is done on private land. And I would again guess that the majority of that probably is occurring on a lease. But, you know, like you said, when you go out west, you hear a lot more about, you know, public land opportunities and that kind of thing. But I know when I've been out west, there's still pressure. There's still, you know, issues you have to contend with dealing with public land. And there's, I know for sure, a lot of private that I saw were like, oh, that's where the game is, you know, so you could see that. And, you know, the other issue, like you said, with door knocking is that if they're willing to let you come hunt for free, they're probably willing to let other people come hunt for free. So it kind of, you have the same issue of pressure and not feeling like you necessarily have a place to yourself, which is a good feeling when you don't have a lot of time to spend outdoors and you know you've got a place that is going to be a retreat, it's going to be a safe haven, and it's going to probably allow you some action when you are able to get out there. For landowners, though, you know, I know there's probably some issues that people think about when it comes to leasing their land. I know for me personally, like I love to hunt. I'm up there all the time. I don't want to lease my hunting rights out because I want to use those. But one of the things that I was really interested in hearing about today is the other things that you can lease out. Like I would love to share my land with people, maybe just not the hunting side of it.
Right. Yeah.
I know we're going to talk about the different leases that you guys are starting to see popping up and, you know, people that are willing to pay for some of those different types of activities. It's not just about hunting. But before we get to that, how much income potential is really out there for leasing out your land?
I think there's a couple pieces here. So, you know, lease, that term is obviously what's traditionally been used for what we're talking about here, especially in the hunting world. So you do a hunting lease, which is, you know, usually a year or multi-year contract. Sometimes it'd be as small as a season, of course. We don't really use that terminology because it really is more of, I mean, if it's more akin to like Airbnb, where it's a short-term rental. So you're basically getting exclusive access to a property for a specific activity for the dates of your booking. And so it seems like a bit of semantics, but I'll tell you why that's important. Our landowners are primarily production agriculture landowners, like owner operators. So these are multi-generation families who actually, like, you know, do agriculture, grow our food, fuel, and fiber for a living. You know, they historically had, you know, before land trust, really, if you wanted to generate some income from the recreation, you know, resources that your property has, you had to lease, right? That was pretty much the only way to go about it. And so that, you know, it's a way to do it, still exists, of course. But a lot of our landowners, because of the types of landowners they are, they're living and working on that land. They didn't like leases as much, and they don't, because you're essentially selling a property right away. So you've lost control. So whether if you lease to an outfitter, you don't get a say in who they bring, when, how many people, all that kind of stuff, right? And if it's just even to an individual or a group, like, again, you've lost that control. The other piece too, as you kind of alluded to, you also sold that right away. So you can't let your friends, family, neighbors, business partners, you know, kid down the street come out and enjoy your property because you sold it. You know, you sold it right away. So lease, I again, it's the word that's been used because it has been the vehicle traditionally to do it. We don't really use that term. But, you know, going back to your question, I mean, I think our highest grossing landowner last year did $70,000-$80,000.
Wow.
And that's just hunting. You know, as you mentioned, hunting is absolutely a tentpole of the business, but we're getting into fishing and camping and farm and ranch experience, all sorts of stuff. So there's a lot of other people who are passionate about the outdoors outside of hunters. And all of us who love the outdoors, whatever that pursuit may be, we all need land to go do it on. And so those are those markets of demand that we're going and developing. Hunting is still, I would call it 90% plus of the bookings that are happening today on land trust, but we're going to be growing those other categories too.
Very cool. As Joe kind of mentioned there, there's lots of different options now, as you alluded to as well, fishing, hunting. And I would assume that some of these things are going to get different prices per acre.
For sure.
Kind of what's your highest impact offering per acre that's possible?
Yeah, again, I think this is where that kind of language of, you know, this is much more of a how you'd measure it in the lease perspective. We don't really look at the per acre value of it because it doesn't translate as well. I mean, of course, you could just take earnings divided by acres, but it's not the mechanism which people actually are transacting. So they're transacting on an experience and a trip rather than a annual lease. I would say, you know, obviously when you get into, you know, turkey hunting is probably, I think last year turkey hunting was the number one activity booked on Land Trust. You know, there's just a lot of amazing properties that we have all over the country. Of course, when you get into elk and, you know, mule deer and stuff like that, those are high value activities and experiences people want. But we have landowners who do really well off of whitetail and turkeys. And, you know, now they might have a pond for fishing, or, you know, they'll allow people to come out and stay too. So from a camping perspective, but, you know, certainly if you have high quality turkey hunting or elk hunting or whitetail or mule deer hunting, those are like, you know, you can generate some pretty serious income off of that.
So it's not necessarily like you said. I mean, we're looking at it through our lens, and we may think of things that way in a, you know, per acre basis. I know if I'm sitting there going, all right, I got 200 acres. I wonder how much I could generate. Cause we hear that story about that guy who generated maybe $60,000-$70,000. And my first question would be like, well, did he have a ton of acreage? Like, does he have a ton of land? Like, does that translate down to, you know, very much money for me when, you know, I own 200 acres? But what I'm hearing you say is it's really not about that. It's about the experience. So if I can find an experience on my property that is, like I said, I'm not really interested in leasing out those hunting rights. I know probably a lot of people in our audience are, you know, they have land that they're, you know, not utilizing for their own recreational hunting. But, you know, I've got a bottomland hardwood forest on my property that extends through my property, and the bird life in there is amazing. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, when I'm in there hunting, you know, turkey hunting, deer hunting, doing what I'm doing, I'm constantly going, I don't know what bird that is, but it looks unique. Like, I mean, there's just tons of this in there. And I would love to have somebody come out who is experienced in that. You know, I mean, like, it's like having a wildlife biologist on the place and him walking through the property and being able to say, well, here, look, Joe, this is this native plant you've got. And before I walked past it, it looked like any other shrub. Now I walk past it and I'm going, oh, that's cool. You know, that's something that's unique to my property. Is that the trick here? Is that you need to find the thing that people are fired up about, and maybe your property offers that?
Yeah. And this is where, you know, we at Land Trust are business partners with our landowners. So our landowners are not our customers. They're our partners, our mutual customers, the guests that people, you know, that are invited out of these properties. And, you know, when you talk about birds, it sounds funny to hunters, but birding is like twice as big as hunting is in the U.S., if not a little bit more. And they are just as avid. They're just as willing to wake up at 2 a.m. and crawl through the mud and whatever to see birds. And so, you know, we've done some pilots in that kind of birding space. You know, it's still a market that we're just scratching the surface on. But yeah, we have people who are booking stuff to go morel mushroom hunting and foraging. And, you know, there's a lot of different people, again, like I said, who are passionate about the outdoors and want to have access to land to do these things they love that aren't hunters.
Yep.
You know, in talking to the folks over at NCX, we had a good podcast mm-hmm. with them a few weeks ago. And one of the, I'd say maybe a paradigm shift for me in speaking with them is that it's not always about nowadays anyway. And I would imagine that in our lifetimes, we're going to see this become the norm rather than the exception. It's not about what you can take off your property. It's not about how much timber you can cut down or how many crops you can grow. Yes, that's still a component of
healthy management.
Yeah, and profitability and land ownership, but the experience economy, you know, like you said, whether that's hunting or bird watching or foraging, that's going to become more and more a part of a landowner's income. Just the way with NCX, you know, being able to learn about how conservation can actually bring income into the property. Like, you may be able to make more money on your timber in the long term by leaving it there and putting it and enrolling it into something like a carbon credit program that pays you a little bit throughout the years. But then one day, if you do sell that property, the recreational value is going to be a lot more than it would be if you clear cut that land. And that's one of the things that I'm thinking about a lot, you know, when I'm making management decisions on my property. You mentioned that with land trust, like turkey hunting was probably one of the biggest drivers of income for landowners last year. But what are some of the other things? We've mentioned birding and you mentioned morels. I mean, like we don't have morels down in South Alabama where I am, but we have, I've found lion's mane and I've found chanterelles and chicken of the woods, like tons of different types of mushrooms, you know, that you can forage.
Whenever you were telling your birding story there, your hardwood bottom, I thought you were definitely going to talk about the foraging.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool, you know, and
that's unique.
And yeah. And there's an enjoyment in just strolling through the forest, searching for something, and then enjoying, you know, everything else that's there while you're looking.
For sure, yeah. Look, those types of activities, fishing, you know, we have just more of what we call kind of general outdoor recreation packages. So when you look at listings, hunting is kind of a very specific thing because obviously it's state regulated, you know, it's an extractive thing and it's a different category. But then for all these other things, we have just kind of general outdoor recreation packages. So, you know, for your land, maybe you have a pond on it with some bass and bluegill or whatever, and you can say, hey, look, we've got foraging. We do have different mushroom species here. You can fish, you can, you know, park your camper there and just enjoy being outdoors. And it doesn't have to be like, you know, itemized down to that. And it's, you know, a lot of our landowners have that. People are booking a lot of shed hunting, you know, coming up this time of year. And I think what we're really excited about with the types of landowners, you know, but we have about 1.5 million acres in 40 plus states right now. Again, most of that is owner operator production agriculture landowners. So people who are living, working that ground. The farm and ranch experiences is a category that I think will be bigger kind of than any ever all the other ones. And that it's a really interesting space because it's allowing people, you know, the public, the 99% of us who aren't producers, to interact with agricultural producers. And, you know, this has been anything from, you know, harvest experiences, you know, could be bottle feeding calves or, you know, regenerative ranching or farming tours, you know, just basically how they're running their operations. And I often joke with our landowners, like, you know, your daily chores are interesting to people who didn't grow up on the farm or ranch, you know? And so you know, I want to bring these accretive income streams to our landowners that are also symbiotic. So, you know, we're not going to ever say, hey, you should cut down your, you know, timber and put in solar panels. Like, that's just not really symbiotic with agricultural production or really land management perspective. But I want to bring these things that are very symbiotic with their day-to-day lives that keeps them in control, generates income in kind of a very low-touch manner. And so these, you know, farm and ranch experiences, you know, if you were in Louisiana and you're a rice farmer, with land trust, you should be obviously generating income from waterfowl hunting. You should be generating income from birding. And then you could be doing, you know, crawfish tours where people come in and pick their own crawfish and do a boil. Like, that's an idea of how a property on land trust will eventually start to monetize all aspects of the recreation of that property.
You know, one of my favorite icons in the world of regenerative agriculture is Joel Salatin. He talks a lot about, you know, diversifying income streams on your property. And I was reading a story. I was reading a little bit about no-till agriculture, and they were talking about the use of cover crops. And, you know, you think about, like, this time of year, we're getting ready to plant our spring food plots. I'm going to be putting some sunflowers out as part of my blend. And I'm doing that for soil health. I'm doing that for doves. I'm doing that for deer. I'm doing that for all the wildlife that's going to use it. But, you know, I was reading about this cover crop strategy, and they were talking about how much money they were making leasing, renting the field for a few hours a day to photographers who wanted to come out and just get photos that they're going to go out and then sell, you know, and
pretty landscape. That's
yeah.
Cool.
And I mean, it was something that was already there. It didn't cost them anything extra to produce it. It was just, they hadn't found the market for it and hadn't exploited that market. And they just needed a connection. Sounds like that what you guys are doing. Another thing that comes to my mind is art. You were talking about the folks looking, you know, for, you know, foraging and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But man, artifact hunting, like the guys that are picking up
arrow, you know, tips and stuff.
arrowheads and the like are as avid and rabid a fan base of people.
Metal detecting, we have some like old war grounds and berms and stuff that soldiers and stuff, you know, old roads and stuff. Metal detecting is a really cool thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. We were talking about Ekalaka or before we got on here, but we actually have some landowners out there because there's a lot of dinosaurs. I mean, Montana has a lot of dinosaur fossils, and there's actually tours that they're offering through Land Trust. But yeah, there's people who call themselves rock hounds. They're all about finding rocks and stuff. There's just so many. We have people who are doing photography on Land Trust. We have the military. Like, we're working with some, you know, military units to get from a training perspective. It's a lot easier to do that kind of training, those training operations on private land than it is public land. Yeah, there's just, we've talked to the people who are in the film industry, who are, you know, whether it be for, you know, TV shows, movies, commercials, et cetera, when they want to be, you know, they want to shoot on, you know, undeveloped land. There are a lot of different use cases. Now, you know, to the landowners out there, are we going to blow out your place with bookings for, you know, film right now? No, we're not going to. These are all opportunities, you know, definitely hunting, fishing, you know, we're going to be growing that kind of herbaland and camping space a little bit more. Those are going to be the main ones. But the cool thing is, you know, by starting with hunting, people who love to hunt just generally love the outdoors. And, you know, like, we all have young kids, as we were talking about before hopping on here. We might have acquired you as a Land Trust customer for hunting. But then when you start to see, like, oh, hey, there's a sleigh ride that's outside of town on one of the ranches around Christmas. Like, we booked out sleigh rides. And so, you know, you start to get marketed to, oh, I can go fishing over here. I can go and camp with the kids and do like a little farm tour at these ranchers over here. So, you know, again, people who love to hunt generally love pretty much almost all things outdoors. And so it's a great way to be able to, quote, cross sell to that same audience for other things than hunting.
You know, like I mentioned in the beginning, I want to do the hunting. So I'm not interested in really leasing that out, but there are other opportunities that landowners have that may not even coincide with hunting season. And right. I would love to have more people on my property outside of hunting season, you know, than not. I'd love to share it. Number one, it's a good thing.
Keep
for
a presence there as well.
Yeah. A rural, yes, remote property. It's, if you've got people on it, problems don't usually occur when people are there.
Yeah, trespassing goes down a little bit more. Yeah, for sure.
That being said, it does give me some heartburn to think about having people on my property all the time, because I can see some things going south. I mean, things go south for me when I'm there sometimes. So it could definitely go south with the unacquainted. What problems might people encounter, you know, if you're talking about, you know, for landowners, from a landowner's mm-hmm. perspective, what do they need to be aware of? How do you guys, you know, you mentioned you partner up with your landowners. How can you guide people so that they don't have to experience these problems? You know, they can see around those corners.
Yeah, that's a good question. So we kind of handle this in a few different ways. We call this almost kind of all trust and safety, because look, Land Trust, the name of the company, you know, we're not a conservation easement organization. You know, I frankly, when I started the company, I didn't know what conservation easements were. I just took two of the most important words that I thought for the business, like land. We're a private lands company. We're staunchly pro private land ownership and property rights. I think it's a cornerstone of the American dream. And two, trust, like old fashioned trust, right? You know, I trust you, you trust me. If you think about this, you know, our landowners are inviting people onto their properties, which is, you know, not just, especially for our owner operator, you know, producers, that's like their legacy. So it's a little bit more intimate than just like, you know, renting somebody's spare apartment on Airbnb, right, or something, right? And so we want to make sure that there's a high degree of trust and safety for our landowners and our guests too. So, you know, it starts with, hey, when, you know, you as a guest, you come to Land Trust and you want to, you know, inquire with a landowner, make a booking, like, you accept our terms of service when you create an account. You're indemnifying your landowners. You're holding them harmless for, you know, any kind of litigation. You are, you have to do ID verification. So we have your government ID, and you pay with a credit card. So, you know, a lot of the problems that I had seen when I was starting this company and the stories I heard from landowners of, you know, the bad experiences they had really came down to anonymity. You know, somebody that knocked on the door, whatever, and, you know, 9 out of 10 people are probably good people. And then the one person that messed everything up, and there's no recourse for that landowner because they don't know who that person is. So right. You strip away that, right? We have ratings, two-way ratings after every trip, just kind of like if you guys have ever used Airbnb, VRBO, Uber, whatever, right? Marketplaces where you get to rate each other. So that, and tying that to true identity. So now We have 98%+ five-star ratings from landowners to guests over thousands of bookings. That didn't exist before LandTrust. You wouldn't have had that high of a ratio of, quote, five-star ratings from a landowner to their, especially in the hunting space. But then we have insurances too. So, you know, we have $1 million general liability. We've got participant insurance. We've got property protection as well. And so we really try to approach this from a all-encompassing perspective. Is it perfect? No. Can anyone sue anybody for anything at any time? Yes, unfortunately. But we really do take a kind of a 360-degree approach to it. And then I think, look, from a, you know, we built LandTrust for the producer, really, which is kind of the busiest landowner because they're doing seven jobs every day. And to be very hands-off, this is all about, we call it DIY private, right? So that's what it's really designed for. So, you know, we partner with mapping companies like Onyx and HuntWise. And when we onboard our landowners, we're building full maps of the properties. So boundaries, waypoints, where stands are, where parking spots are, no-go zones, you know, all that. So the way you kind of, I'm sure, have your properties laid out for your own, on your own mapping, we do that. And then, you know, when guests book it, they get arrival instructions. And instead of, like, you know, the Wi-Fi password, like you do at the Airbnb, you're getting maps, you're getting arrival instructions from you, you're getting all the rules, all that stuff. So, you know, we really try to make it as easy and turnkey and as do it yourself as possible. Now, a lot of our landowners lean in and they like to be more involved, but we built it for the landowner who doesn't have the time, and it should be like turnkey. So we're always improving that process. We're not going to pretend to be perfect in any way, shape, or form, but we've done this and facilitated thousands of trips across the country. We're getting better and better at it. And, you know, we always have great customer service for people when something doesn't go right.
All right, folks, we're going to be right back. Y'all take a minute and check out some of our sponsors. First South Farm Credit. What does a farm mean to you? Maybe it's just a piece of land where you can go relax or enjoy the outdoors. Whatever the farm means to you, First South Farm Credit can help you finance or refinance that perfect piece of land. As a successful financial cooperative, First South shares its profits with its borrowers in the form of a patronage refund, which lowers your cost of borrowing. To find out how First South can help you, visit their website at firstsouthland.com or call them at 800-955-1722. They are an equal housing lender. Texas Hunter. Since 1954, Texas Hunter Products has produced the best engineered and finest quality feeders and hunting blinds in the industry. The Texas Hunter brand has become synonymous with quality and durability. By sticking to premium standards, the company delivers tough, long-lasting products that meet the real-life needs of anglers and hunters across America. Their fish feeders, deer feeders, hunting blinds, and outdoor accessories are among the highest rated in the industry. You can trust that your purchase from Texas Hunter Products will meet your needs for generations to come. To learn more, visit texashunter.com.
Seems like you guys have thought about a lot of things that could have potential problems and have fixed it, kind of nip it in the bud.
We try to.
Yeah, I think you've done a great job of kind of giving us an overview of LandTrust and how it benefits people that don't have access to private land. And it also benefits the private landowner, kind of to being a matchmaker there for niches. What about the process of kind of listing your land and seeing what opportunities are available on your land and how to get a price? How does that work?
Yeah, that's a great question, Butch, because, like, you know, going back to what we're talking about with the NCX, I can just go there and say, here's my acreage in Alabama, and send them a map, you know, and it doesn't cost me a thing. I can just go through that and it tells me what I could be eligible for or what I am eligible for.
Yeah. So first and foremost, of course, it's free to use LandTrust as a landowner. We are a business partner. We only make money when you make money. So, you know, we make money on transactions, on bookings. And it's 80-20, just by the way. So the landowner keeps 80%, we get 20%. But, you know, as landowners are interested, we have landowners every day coming from all over the country kind of signing up. We have a really great team. We have called them landowner success managers, and then we have also landowner onboarding who will talk to you. We'll look at your place on a map, kind of like we were talking about. We'll look at your place on a map, talk to them, get an understanding of what the property has from a natural resources perspective, from habitat and wildlife perspective, et cetera. And a bunch of other factors. And we'll say, hey, look, you probably with your place, you know, maybe your family likes to hunt whitetails, but you don't care about upland or waterfowl or whatever. So, you know, we could list, you know, upland or waterfowl or whatever it might be from a hunting perspective. You've got a pond, you got bass and bluegill or whatever. You can list that kind of stuff. And then, you know, you're an interesting market to do camping or hey, you've got a really interesting kind of operation. You can host people out to show them how you're running cattle, or you're doing no-till, or you know, whatever it could be. Pricing is always up to the landowners. So again, we're all about 100% control. However, you know, we can give guidance. You know, one thing I would say is kind of to our point earlier, where you're asking, you know, talking in more traditional terms of lease and per acre and all that stuff. We're market making right now. So there isn't an established market for short-term bookings for outdoor rec. We're creating that market currently. So it's still, pricing is still much more art than science today. As we scale and regionally and by activity, we'll start to have enough data. And we do have a data science team here to actually start getting a feel for like, hey, what are the right price ranges for these things? But, you know, our team has a good guess. We start there if the landowner wants to, and, you know, we can adjust. You can always adjust from there.
You mentioned market making, and you know, I want to go back to kind of the beginning a little bit here. Take an area where like Butch and I are, you know, coastal Alabama, the panhandle of Florida. This area is known for its beaches, and it's known for its short-term bookings. You know, you go get a condo at the beach for a week for spring break, and it's very commonplace. If you go into these areas and you rent a condo for a week as a condo owner, you can make a lot more money, even if your property is only rented half the year, than you could if you rented that property to one person.
That's right.
For the whole year. And I could see a definite advantage. Like, say I wanted to, you were talking about Ekalaka. I mean, I went out there and went on an antelope hunt a couple of years ago, and we hunted public land, but there was definitely, I mean, the very first afternoon, I mean, we watched a herd of antelope move from public to private. And they stayed there.
Funny how shooting at animals will do that to them.
The whole week, you know. And I was thinking, you know, how cool would it be if I could, you know, kind of set up a base camp out there and explore that area. And also, if you knew when you got there, you were going to have a place to hunt. Like, I would be willing to pay for that to have guaranteed access and to be the only person there.
Exclusive access, yep.
But I can't spend a whole lot of time in Ekalaka. Like, I'm going to have to go out there, and maybe I can take a week off, and that's just all I'm going to get this year is maybe nine days max that I could go hunt. So that would be a big advantage, even if, you know, it was sizable amount, you know, compared to, say, if I leased it the whole year per day.
Yeah, why would you lease it the whole year? Like, you're going to spend a few days.
You know, but you see guys leaving, you know, I mean, Butch and I have plenty of friends that will drive out of Alabama and they go to Illinois and they lease a farm for the whole year. When they can only really get up there, they maybe get
3 to 5 days,
2 weeks a year max to hunt it, you know. But they got to lease the thing for the whole year if they want to have it. So that's a long way of saying, like, do you guys see this in terms of land? Is the short-term booking income going to exceed the lease income if they were to do it that way? But still, do you have people on your land less than you would?
Yeah. So I think it's how most of these markets work. Yeah, you're right. Again, I paid my annual lease in New York City however many years ago with renting my place out on Airbnb for what? I don't know, 2 or 3 months out of the year. So yeah, you know, the short term rental model will generate more dollar revenue per day if you break it out like that. And that's really, it's like the more interesting mechanism is not the, you know, potentially kind of like the per acre, which you could always back out prices to per acre. And we do just to translate it sometimes. But yeah, it's that piece and plus the control. Again, because of who our landowners are, even if there is more money right away, because you know, look, the nice thing about a lease is you get a check at the front. You're like, cool, that's my money. So that's nice. But to our landowner base, while that might be nice, the forfeiture of control over that, over their land and that kind of that recreational asset is not worth it. And they want to retain it. And by the way, yeah, they probably will make more money in the long term, especially because, you know, you don't see a lot of like birding leases or camping leases or fishing leases. You know, you see hunting leases, but then you have all these other activities. Like, is someone going to lease your place to forage for? No, that wouldn't happen in today's market. It doesn't. But with a platform like Land Trust, you can monetize all these different aspects of
it. Well, and there might be a 2 week period that the particular hummingbird that
your
you're trying to see
popping off.
Is going to be moving through, and you don't want that. You don't have any reason to be there for the rest of the year. And part of the joy of camping is I want to go see something new, you know, like I camped there last time. I don't really necessarily want
honestly,
to go
like,
back.
That piece there, like as hunters, fishermen, people love the outdoors. Like we all have our, we like to do our things that we got close to home that we do all the time, but we always want new experiences, new places, new types of hunting, fishing species, all that stuff. So that's what is amazing. We look kind of like a travel marketplace from that perspective, right?
Yeah.
That's very cool. So if I'm understanding you correctly, you know, we've talked about price per acre and things like that. It sounds like, or if I'm understanding it correctly, you can have 1 acre and that could be a highly sought after, you know, whatever is on that piece of property, or you could have 1,000 and it doesn't necessarily matter as long as you have what people are looking for.
That's exactly right. It's funny. When I launched the company, of all places, my first landowner was in South New Jersey and great guy. But yeah, he had a handful of farms. He was just farming corn and beans and, you know, between, let's call it 40 and 100 acres. And I don't know, he did like 30 grand that first year. And we were like babies. We didn't have it, you know, because he's close to big demand centers, Philadelphia, New York City. You know, finding any sort of exclusive hunting access is tough because you have these tons of hunters in these locations. And he had like, you know, white-tailed deer, geese, a little bit of fishing. Nothing like, it wasn't trophy 200-inch bucks or anything. It was just, hey, I want a place to myself to go and do this, you know, do this for, and I think he was charging anywhere from $50 to $150 a day. So across his handful of farms, he was able to generate that kind of income. So yeah, it's not about like, oh, I don't have a 10,000 acre place. If you have 15 acres and it's the right 15 acres with, you know, maybe it's on a creek bottom or it's kind of pond or whatever, like you could do very well.
Yeah, that's very cool. That aspect is really cool. You don't have to have a big scale. I wonder, Nick, if there's like a market for trimming limbs. Do people want to do that? Because I have a lot of trimming to do. I would really like that.
Collecting firewood.
I know it's a joke, but, you know, I told you guys I was down with the Mossy guys 2 weeks ago now. And we're really interested. We're going to start hopefully working a little closer kind of with their gamekeeper side. And, you know, we talked about where I think we really align with those guys is, well, we do on quite a few things, but I want to make having high quality habitat profitable.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not just like for the conservation aspect, which is awesome, you know, but it's, you know, some people don't have the luxury to do stuff because it feels good. Some, you know, especially a lot of our landowners who are production ag landowners, like they got to make money.
Yep.
These are operations, these are businesses. And so what I want to do is I want to be able to, you know, show our landowners that having high quality habitat and wildlife populations is profitable. And I, you know, I know it sounds crazy to you guys down there, because when I went down there, I realized that like turkey are like elk to Montanans down in the South. So a lot harder birds to kill down there than up here. They'll look at you up here, you know, standing in a field. Down there was not the case. But, you know, in the West, when I was first getting this going, like ranchers, when you go talk to them about turkeys, like, you can shoot every single turkey in my feedlot right now. I don't care. and you're like, no, don't do that. Let's not do that. There's a lot of people who would love to go out and chase those birds. And we literally over the last few years have had ranchers who might've started out by thinking like that, like I could care less, kill every turkey you see, to, oh, I made 5, 10, 15 grand last year hosting a handful of turkey hunters who had a blast. And we loved meeting them because they're from all over the country. And how do we make better turkey habitat? And is that because they're a bleeding heart turkey conservationist? No, it's because you show that like, hey, this is now, you know, having a high quality turkey population is profitable.
Yeah, viable and lucrative.
100%. And I want to be clear, like our production ag landowners are stewards of the land. They've been there 5, 6 generations. So the reason that there is, you know, wildlife and game that we want to go hunt is because they do what they do. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, it's not ever something that they're thinking explicitly about right then. But I think that's where we can really partner with someone with such a depth of knowledge like Mossy and the Gamekeepers program they have to just say, hey, look, you already know that recreation is profitable now with Land Trust, and you can do it in a way that you want to do it and not just have to do a flat lease where you lose that control. But hey, maybe we start doing some burning. Maybe you start doing X, Y, and Z, you know, practices every month of the year to make this resource better and better, because you'll make more money.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great point. I can't describe to people when they ask me why I wake up so early, you know, and why I go out and why I talk.
I have 3 kids under the age of 5. That's why I wake up so early.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, when I start telling people about my addiction to turkeys, you know, they just look at me with this weird look on their face, you know, kind of like, you are different. And then I just can't describe what it feels like to have a turkey gobble at you from 10 yards or 20 yards away and feel
rattle
literally
your insides.
Feel it rattle the ground, you know, and to be able to have that, you have to go have that experience to appreciate it. And then once you've had an experience like that, and if it gets to you like it's gotten to me, then you start going, all right, I want to have more of that. And I want to provide that for as many other people as I can. Now I'm ready to start learning about trapping. Now I'm ready to start learning about prescribed fire. Now I'm ready to start learning about timber stand improvement and all the every aspect of land management that goes into having healthy turkey populations. And the problem with that is that stuff is not always, it's not free.
No.
Sometimes it's just a pure expense. Sometimes you can get some cost share money like we were talking about with NCX. Sometimes you can get it paid for entirely. Sometimes some of it benefits the land enough that, you know, it even maybe makes a little income, but it definitely doesn't, all of it does not, you know, and not every landowner is in a position where they can just go, you know what? I love turkeys and I'm just going to do everything I can, you know, and it's not always a turkey, you know, it could be a, you know, a hummingbird.
Turkeys is a great example of that. And none of our landowners that I have met have started out like, almost none of them hunt turkeys. The funny thing about farmers and ranchers is the ones that I've met, and you know, a lot of them hunt, but hunting is a very different thing to an owner, operator, producer, right? You know, like up here in the West, it's like, cool. They've been looking at that antelope 363 days. It's the opening day. They shoot the antelope. They go back to work.
Right.
You know, they're not buying like all the camo and, you know, just like obsessed. They have a job that, and they live on that land. It's a very different experience, generally speaking,
sure.
from what, like, you know, what I experience. But what I love about land trust and the opportunity is to take those landowners who will never hunt a turkey and don't care. Like, they're just never going to feel that thing that you just described. And that's okay, right? It's just not their life is very busy and they're working very hard. It's just not something they're going to do. But with land trust, we can show them that, hey, those things are really cool and they make you money. And that habitat and that wildlife thing, and they're already stewards of the land. Like, this is a great reason to do it. You might not ever hear that, you know, spring thunder and really care that much, but here's another reason to care.
I love the idea that you can help landowners make different sources of income. Because again, we can sit here and pontificate about how a particular management practice is what's best to do. But at the end of the day, you only got so much cash. You can only do what you can do. And if owning land is not profitable, you start to have to make compromises. You have to cut that timber you didn't want to cut or
not burn or not plant.
Exactly.
Or parcel it out and subdivide
it
and develop it. And yeah, absolutely.
And that's not what most landowners want to do. You know, I mean,
definitely not.
They want to treat it right. I think what most people that I run into that own land want to do is they want to leave it better than they found it. And that's just not always possible, or at least seemingly so. So the idea that you can help landowners find these additional sources of income that are non-traditional, maybe something they've never heard of, maybe something they've never tried, is a great way to help overall the landscape to be able to be managed the way it should be versus the most profitable way.
Yeah. And again, if you can make having high quality habitat and wildlife profitable, like, we're very incentive driven beings, you know,
sure.
You move the profit incentive somewhere, like, people act rationally to it. And so that, yeah, I just want to show landowners across the country that high quality wildlife and habitat that provides high quality experiences, whether it's hunting or fishing or just being outdoor with kids or whatever it is, will make you money. It makes you feel good and it's good for the land, but also, you know, it helps pay for that land, taxes, all that kind of stuff.
You know, I first heard about you guys when I listed my land. I say listed. I enrolled my land over on ncx.com.
Oh, nice.
I was there. I was looking at the different cost share programs that are available to me. And I noticed land trust. I noticed you guys, you know, working with NCX. So tell me about y'all's relationship.
Yeah, we've been working with them, gosh, I want to say last 6 months, maybe. Trevor, who runs our partnerships here, has kind of helped kind of spearhead that. I forget how we got introduced to them. Maybe it was in a an investor or somebody, but we got introduced. I'm like, yeah, this is, I mean, what they do and what we do, they're very symbiotic. You know, we both share a similar ethos of connecting, you know, land and landowners to resources that will drive increased revenue and doing it in a way that's, you know, conservation minded, of course. And so, you know, for us, it's been a great partnership. They've, it seems like the landowners who have found themselves on NCX tend to like what we do too. So that's always a great partnership when you have, let's say, a Venn diagram of audiences that see that symbiotic nature of it, you know?
Yeah, it's really a neat feature to be able to go and see what you're eligible for from all aspects. It's really cool to learn, oh man, there's something here income-wise that I didn't even think about when I bought this place. You know, I mean, I know from my personal experience, I was just thinking about mostly it's going to be timber.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of going to be where the income is going to come from. Yeah, I could do some things and maybe start producing pine straw was another opportunity that, you know, we've talked about on here. But it was pretty much that, you know, and so when I'm looking at that land and I'm saying, all right, I can kind of count on, you know, roughly this much timber income over the years and start to extrapolate out what's going to be affordable to purchase the place for. And hopefully we maintain that so that we don't have to sell it. You know, maybe my boys can take it over and it'd be profitable for them someday. But timber markets change, you know, you don't, what was true for my father is not necessarily going to be true for me and so on with my boys. I guess the, you know, the beginnings of all this is you got to figure out what's possible. Sometimes it takes a little spark to just go, man, I never even thought about there might be somebody who would want to come out here and camp when I'm not hunting.
Right.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind having somebody out here camping. That's no problem for me, you know, as long as we set the ground rules.
Something cool about that, too, is I know we're talking, you know, mostly to landowners today, but we take a lot of stuff for granted. I mean, just going up there and, you know, like this weekend, burning and getting dirty and, you know, running the bush hog.
Being outdoors. Yep.
We do. We really take it for granted that we have access to that all the time, and a lot of people do not. So I think it's very cool for both sides.
Yeah.
You know, I started this company because I don't have that kind of access. Now, you know, thankfully we, you know, we have 1.5 million acres of access that's available, folks. Yeah, you got to pay for the opportunity. Of course, it's, you know, private property. And again, that property's got to be able to pay for itself, whether it's through ag production and recreation and conservation stuff. You know, it's always an and. And I think one of the things you mentioned, hey, you know, timber markets change and, you know, who knows what that's going to be like. I would make the assertion that the experiences market is only going to grow. Like,
for sure.
I think we're probably all around the same age. And I think it's going to be even truer for our kids. People are shifting their dollars away from things and more towards experiences. And, you know, getting outdoors and going hunting or fishing with your family, friends, et cetera, it's not going to go away. And, you know, the matter of fact is making it more easily to actually facilitate that through a marketplace like Land Trust. That is going to be a very, very large market for a very long time. You know, people are not going to stop wanting to go outdoors. So
yeah,
that's what I would posit.
I totally agree. I mean, it's a different day and age, you know, from even when we were kids. You know, when you were a kid, you did what your parents did and you didn't really learn about a whole lot more. There wasn't anywhere to learn about a whole lot more. Maybe you watched some hunting and fishing shows on TV or something like that, but there wasn't, you know, there was no YouTube. There was no algorithm to
no Google
point you in, you know, into activities that you may have otherwise not ever been exposed to. But yeah, I mean, there's somebody sitting, you know, in a city right now that,
go on, I gotta get out of here. Need some fresh air.
Or they see some cool thing on YouTube and they're like, man, I'd love to do that.
I want to do that. Yeah.
How do I do that? You know, how do I get access to go do that? Because going out and doing it, that's daunting. That's probably the most daunting aspect.
Yeah. And this goes for that scenario. And I have friends who are still living in the cities and, you know, yeah, they didn't grow up hunting and fishing like I did. So it is, you know, you can get a lot of education from YouTube and YouTube is phenomenal for that. I watch a lot of YouTube and learn about all sorts of stuff. But then when you actually comes to the application of actually going outdoors, public land is a very intimidating space. For the uninitiated, for any of us, it's like, all right, yeah, it's kind of a pain because you got to deal with other people, but we know what we're doing out there.
Right.
You know, I'm not claiming I'm some like big, you know, amazing hunter or anything, but you know, we all know how we can navigate around and we get the dynamics. Like if you were 32 years old and have never gone hunting before and you like public land is incredibly intimidating.
Yeah.
And so for the new hunter, you know, for people who are, you know, going to a new area, whatever. Yeah. Having a place where you're like, hey, with land trust, you're communicating with that landowner, you know, you're supposed to be there. It's yours for whatever the day of the week, however long you're booking it for. And especially because of our landowners, like, you know, who better to show you around than the guy whose family's lived there for six generations, you know, like they can kind of give you the lay of the land.
Much more controlled and more predictable than just going, right. Here you go, you're on 50,000 acres now. Good luck.
Yeah. And there's going to be a bunch of other people with weapons out here. So just FYI, you know?
Yeah. They don't really want you to succeed either. You know?
No, they do not want you to succeed. They don't like you.
Right.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool platform.
Yeah, it is. It's very inspiring to hear that there's all these different ways you could potentially make income from your piece of land. I know I'm passionate about bringing that message to people because I believe in land ownership, and I believe that owning land profitably is the best way to heal any issues that are going on with the land. You know, you've got to be able to afford it to be able to do things the way they should be done. So learning about new sources of income is really, really inspiring to hear about. I know that it's going to be different for every landowner, just like everything is with land.
And like, regionally too, frankly. I mean, like the South as a whole, we're just starting to expand into the South and Southeast. And I was just down there in Mississippi 2 weeks ago. It's different, you know, like yeah. The West and the Midwest have, I feel like they're a little bit more close. You know, there's nuances there too, but like I was down there and I'm going to go spend some time down there because I got to learn that market. And it's a unique thing. And that's the cool thing is you're going to have these regionally specific kind of themes, but then underarching all of it is going to be these like tentpole activities, like hunting, fishing, camping experiences, all that. But then I think you're going to have some like different flavors in different parts of the country.
Nick, how do landowners get involved with land trust? You know, what does it cost them? How do they figure out if this is even an opportunity for them?
Yeah. So one, I would just encourage any landowners that are interested, they can go to our website. It's just landtrust.com. And there's a landowner's button on the top of the homepage, and it's just a page that has all this kind of information we've been talking about. It has videos and testimonials from landowners who've been with us for years now. But then there's also a phone number. Just call us. Like, we're a service-based organization. Yes, you know, it is technology that's facilitating, but we don't think about ourselves as a technology company. We're a service-based business. So when you read reviews about us from landowners, they just talk about our team. So we have an awesome team. We will white glove service the whole thing. We take, you know, we'll go and do most of the work for you, answer any questions, all that stuff. So, and if you're in a handful of states, we actually have people on the ground. So Montana, Nebraska, Kansas, Iowa, Missouri, North Dakota, South Dakota. Like if you're in those regions, we're going to be putting some people on the ground in the South, Southeast too. If you're in those regions, often we can get someone out to actually visit you and your property and just kind of like, you know, go through everything with you. As I mentioned, cool. There is no sell here. It doesn't cost money. We're business partners. You own the land. We build the platform, do all the marketing. And that's our partnership. So landowners, again, on any booking, the landowner makes 80%. We take 20%. And that covers credit card processing fees, insurances, you know, just paying to run the business.
Well, Nick, it's a lot of fun talking about this with you today. It's inspiring. You know, I hope that our listeners are going to go check out the website. If they want to do that, how can they check out the website, check out the social media channels, or even give you guys a call, like you said?
Yeah. So again, landtrust.com is, you know, where everything can be found. You can go browse different states wherever you live or wherever you're interested in, or you own land, and see what other kind of properties we might have around you. Follow us on social. I think our socials are linked at the bottom of the website. And then of course, you can call us or text us. You know, there's no chatbots or AI over here. It's just real people connecting with our landowners and guests too. So the number you can call us at is 406-709-8450.
All right, folks, we're going to be right back. Y'all take a minute and check out some of our sponsors. This week's show is brought to you by Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply. Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply offer numerous items to help get your project done right the first time. They carry a variety of different panel profiles and your choice of colors and gauges with all the matching trim and accessories. They also offer a full line of hardware items and post-frame building design. Their friendly and knowledgeable sales representatives are always willing to help answer any questions or concerns you may have. Contact them with any questions or to get a free estimate today. Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply. your metal roofing headquarters. Southern Seed and Feed. Do you want to provide better nutrients to your deer? If so, try Southern Buck Food Plot Blends. Your deer will love it. At Southern Seed and Feed, they specialize in making textured feed for horses, cattle, sheep, goats, hogs, chickens, small animals, and wildlife. Their products are proven irresistible, scientifically formulated to promote excellent herd health and hunter satisfaction. They supply products to various distributors throughout the South. So visit their website at southernseedfeed.com or call 662-726-2638 to find the dealer nearest you. But, you know, I started this out by saying I don't really want to lease out or even just do a short-term booking for hunting on my place. But yeah, I'm going to retract that statement because think about pigs. I mean,
yeah,
we got a pig
problem. We can't kill enough of them.
Yeah. You can't kill enough of them. And you kill them this week and they're back the next week. And you know, you got to trap, you know, if you really want to make a dent on the population and you got to continually trap outside of deer season. I would love to have some people come to my place and keep them harassed. You know,
yeah, for sure. And yeah, after talking with Nick, my mind got opened up a little bit as well. I mean, something as simple as, you know, one of the hot topics right now, or fat, or whatever you want to call it, is free range organic meat, and deer meat, venison, is highly sought after.
Right,
let people come kill a few does on your place.
Right,
you know, they fill their freezer, they scratch that itch of getting in the outdoors and doing a little hunting, and you get your herd,
you get your doe
managed,
quota,
correct.
Yeah, and if you're really into it, for if you've got all the deer you need, you know,
right,
it's tough to keep shooting them,
for sure. Yeah, and you need to.
Right. So instead of shooting them and then just having to give them to
right
somebody that you know maybe that wants one kinda, then you let somebody else have an experience on your property. I mean, that's just one example. But then, man, let your mind wander. You start to think about foraging, artifact hunting, birding, camping.
I got to figure it out on my place. It's going to be trimming limbs up by horseback.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I got a lot of limbs to trim.
Yeah. Well, if you trim the limbs, you have a better opportunity to maybe see that lion's mane mushroom.
There you go. Yeah.
Trim these limbs down that road.
Yeah. Just cut your way in, really. Very cool stuff, man. I think one thing that really, you know, stuck out to me is you can have 1 acre or you can have 10,000 acres. If, as long as you have what people are looking for, then this is an option for you.
That is true. It's very true. You just got to have, you know, I mean, if you've got the right acre, you know,
right.
That's very true. The thing that stuck out to me is that land ownership, in my experience, unless you're getting into something like mining, you know, where you're doing heavy duty extraction, land ownership's not a high income generation activity.
No, it's expensive.
Yeah. I mean, you get these moments, you know, where, yeah, we harvested timber. We got a lot of income that came in that moment, but the rest of the time it's not. And most of the income you generate in land ownership, I shouldn't even say income, most of the wealth you generate in land ownership is just by the land growing in value. And so any income that you can generate on a piece of land is important to at least know about, at least understand that it's out there. And I meet so many people doing what I do that are having to sell their land because they just can't afford it.
Yeah.
You know, I meet people all the time. They either can't afford it or they know that they can't treat it the way it needs to be treated. I can't tell you how many clear cuts I've seen that didn't get replanted because somebody needed all the money from those trees. They cut that timber. Forester came back and said, all right, you know, here's the replanting costs. Here's what you're going to have to do to get this back to being a managed timber stand. And they go, nah, I'm not going to do any of that. I'm just going to let it lay fallow and let God sort it out, you know? And that's not what you want. That's not what you want to see at the landscape level. So opportunities like land trust, NCX, every little bit helps. And you may even find that it's not just helping. Like, is you're looking at it going, wow, this has been a great investment for me because I thought outside the box and I wasn't relying on just one thing.
For sure. Diversify your income. I mean, that's the goal.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for us this week. Appreciate you joining us. We want to make it easy for you to listen. So here's a handy option for you. To get the podcast emailed to you each week, just text the word hunting to 773-770-4377. Again, just text the word hunting to 773-770-4377. you'll join our email list. And wherever you are listening to podcasts, go ahead, subscribe, rate, and review. Send us a written review. We'd love to hear from you. If you've got a show topic that you are interested in and like to see us cover, just email us at pros@landhunting.com. That's going to do it for us. Y'all stay safe out there. We'll talk to you next time.